Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us today on a Monday afternoon. It's rather nice out there, if I say so myself, right here on the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City, where we bring the arts right to you. Put it right in front of you. You can see exactly what's going on. You know what you're going to, as you make your plans for what you're going to do on the coming weekend. A couple of fine shows to tell you about on the show today. I always say that, don't I? That's because I have some of the finest people come to talk about some of the finest shows going on in the community. And today we're going to talk about two of the better ones. First, we're going to go down to Culture House. That's down in Olathe.
That's right.
And with us, they're going to be doing West Side Story. They took a big bite out of the apple, and it's West Side Story.
That's
kind of the difficult. Amy Sander, the director, also the general manager of Culture House. She works with youth. She performs. She choreographs. She directs.
Correct.
She teaches.
Teaches as well.
She brings home the bacon.
Really?
Fries it up in a pan.
And never lets... No.
Yeah, right.
Forget. Yeah. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Did you do everything down there?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
got
she does.
A hand in everything. Marketing stuff, programs, cleaning toilets, vacuuming.
Really? That's right.
All sorts of things.
Well, this is my first interview with Culture House, so we're going to learn about it as well as the show you're
great.
Doing. Also with me, Jeremiah Enna. He is the executive director of Culture House.
That's right.
We're going to let him field some of these questions as
sure,
well.
That'd be great.
You are doing West Side Story. Now, you've done, is it two shows you've done previous to this?
Yeah, I mean, every season, I think our list goes up in the number of shows we're doing.
Seems like we keep adding, yeah.
That's right, because we have so many extremely talented kids coming to the Culture House, even down into the children's level, that we want to create as many opportunities for kids to have access to so they can grow in their skill and talent as performers, the stage being a huge part of their education at the Culture House, as well as the classes they take. So already this is kind of our spring season. We just did a small musical for children called Children's Letters to God, and that was for ages 7 to 12. We had two casts for that, and then West Side Story, which Amy is, you know, our top director at the Culture House, and, you know, once a year, hopefully sometimes more, if she wants to exhaust herself, she takes on a big project. So she took on West Side Story. This is for our older students, and to give them a real challenge, because West Side Story is a real challenge.
I'll bet so. I'll bet it really is. Do I need to say it? It's a kind of a reworking,
yeah.
A modernized reworking of Romeo and Juliet. I'm always surprised at the people who don't pick up on
that. Yeah, it's definitely, that's where the story came from, is the Shakespeare story of Romeo and Juliet. It's obviously the musical version. And instead of two families kind of going against each other, it's two, there you have the Puerto Ricans and the Americans, and the Puerto Ricans are living in New York City, and the hoodlums in New York don't much like that. So, but very similar things that you'll see, balcony scenes, and essentially an American boy falls in love with a Puerto Rican girl. And kind of the story unfolds from there, very similar to Romeo and Juliet. But it came out in Broadway in the mid-1950s. And I don't think people realize that it actually came out during the same decade that it actually takes place, because, you know, the story actually and the costuming and everything is 1950s style. So
gangs were a problem then. They still are today, actually.
Yes.
So pretty
yep.
much rings true.
It's very relevant. And we were kind of talking on the way here about my director's note and how I mentioned that, you know, that it helps you kind of reflect on problems that we still have. Prejudices and government being able to control some of those things. So it's definitely still relevant. 50 years plus old story, but still very relevant.
And she gives all the performers a chance to really ponder how is it relevant today? What are the groupings today? What are the prejudices today?
Mm-hmm.
How are you looking at that as teenagers? Because the show is really about teenagers. It's about, you know, that older teenager group, and that's who's performing it. So it's a great exercise, not just in developing their musical and theatrical skills, but in thinking about this important work that at the time was really, I don't know if it was explosive, but it was definitely challenging people's prejudices.
Yeah, this is definitely for this age group, which is the 13 to 18-year-old students. We have 64 kids in the cast from all over Kansas City area, and I think that this probably is one of the more challenging shows any of them have done, just from the standpoint that we are replicating the Broadway choreography straight from the Broadway show, mimicking that. Vocally, the show is extremely demanding. And then just taking on these characterizations and the message itself and being able to portray that in a very believable, heartfelt, emotional way has been a real challenge. But we spend a lot of time talking about the purpose of the story and the message and the moral to take from it, because I don't usually take on shows unless they have some kind of deep meaning. You know, Diary of Anne Frank is another one I've directed in the past. So mm-hmm. any stories that have that really strong message, just did Les Mis last summer for us with our adult theater, and Big River this summer at the Kauffman Center. So stories that have some real value and historical relevance are the kind of shows that I like to do.
You go for the quality.
Right.
Rather than the quantity.
Absolutely.
You don't say, well, this has more characters in it. There's more dancers.
Right. And there's definitely a place for that, for sure. I love the snazzy Broadway kind of style shows, but I, as a director, prefer the stories where I really can dive into the emotions and the meaning and the purpose behind the story.
Sure. Well, let's help the audience to identify if they don't know the mm-hmm. two gangs, and gangs are my word.
Yep.
I noticed you didn't use that word. Do you not use that word in your directions?
We do. In the cast, we talk about the gangs, the Sharks and the Jets.
Right.
You know, the Jets are the American, very greaser style. That's kind of when we're talking to the kids about portraying these characters. You know, we talk a lot about even the movie Grease, you know, let's look at those greasers and how they kind of carry themselves. Posture and the way that they're carrying themselves in the show has been really fun to experiment with. You know, and then the Sharks, the Puerto Ricans, are totally different in the way that they are kind of embodying these characters. So we've talked about, you know, the Jet guys are these slouchy, hoodlum greaser guys, whereas the Shark guys are very... they have a lot of pride, and posture is up straight and tall and very sophisticated, more so than the greaser guys. Whereas the Shark girls, you know, we talk a lot about sticking their hips out and shoulders back and using their hips a lot. And the greaser girls, the Jet girls, you know, is more posture. You know, standing up straight, standing behind their man. You know, we talk about in the 50s that where the female... you know, always was right behind their man. You know, we've talked a lot
even
about...
Even in the gangs.
In the gangs and on the street.
Sometimes not always the best place to be.
No.
No, not at all.
Hey, on many socioeconomic levels.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Absolutely. Well, and the gangs back then looked so bleached out and sweet compared to what we have today with the gangs and the issues. And so even that is a discussion to think that... you know, there was almost kind of rules of war back then that were a little more, you know, I don't want to say dignified, but, you know, they, you know, in the play, you know, the knives come out, and that's like, no, you don't do that. You're supposed to do it with fists. And, well, today we have so much weaponry, you know, so it really just brings up so many great topics.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've done several Romeo and Juliet interviews this year, because several theaters have done it.
Right.
And I know, and one of the questions I always have is... what was the genesis of this difficulty between the Capulets and the Montagues? And they always say, and it's true, if you examine the script, that that's never made clear because they don't want the audience to take sides.
Mm-hmm.
This
right.
might be a little different.
Yeah, I mean, definitely some of the lyrics. You know, you take the song America, for example, from West Side Story, which is probably one of the more well-known songs. People, if they don't know the words, they definitely know the tune. It's pretty straightforward about that America is the place to be. So, and that at least at this time period that Puerto Rico was not, you know. So we've talked about historically that, you know, things have changed and maybe now that wouldn't be the most appropriate thing to say. But, you know, there is some language and there's some lyrics and things in the show that we've had too since these are teenagers. We've had to have some pretty in-depth conversations about that this is telling a story, that we don't use these kinds of words now, you know. But it's I've been more proud of this cast of kids probably than any whole group of teenage students because of how they've maturely handled the content. So
back in the 50s when it came out, was it the same political situation? I know now a person born in Puerto Rico is a full-blooded United States citizen. Was
Correct.
That the case then?
No, I don't believe so.
No.
So this probably
and even in the song, even in the song, you've got, you know, them talking about we come to America, it's the greatest place, but you've got some of the Puerto Rican characters saying, "Hey, wait a minute, it's better
I
back
go home."
You know, and I think that's always the case, you know, when you're an immigrant, is that tension of am I finding my place here? Am I feeling fulfilled, or am I longing to be back in a more comfortable place, even if it doesn't afford some of the possibilities? And I think, boy, is that relevant today with all the political discussions about immigration and how do we deal with it. And so, I mean, that's just fascinating to me to look back and hear that song and think about what they were going through. And America's been built on immigration. So, you know, seeing the show is really inspiring in discussions and to bring it up. And it humanizes people, and that's one of the things that I think Americans in general hate in political discussions is when we hear someone dehumanizing someone to make a political argument. And West Side Story just humanizes the whole immigration thing, you know, because you're seeing these real passionate people, you know, struggling with living in this country.
And it brings up the whole point of, you know, the whole purpose of West Side Story is really that everyone is created equal. And there really should be no reason why we can't all live in harmony together, you know?
Sure.
And that's ultimately what comes out of the whole story.
Yeah.
Just like Romeo and Juliet, you know, is all the fighting really worth it, you know?
In that day, when we're going back to the 50s now, it's called West Side Story. Is that because in New York, the East Side is more white bread, the white, West Side was more...
takes place on the West Side of New York.
And is that still true today?
You know?
No, I don't. Well, it depends. I think New York, I mean, the island itself has just gotten so expensive.
Oh, sure. The whole island.
Yeah,
Manhattan.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
We're talking about the island of Manhattan.
Yes, the island of Manhattan. So I don't think, I mean, I think New Jersey, the Bronx, you know, I mean, these other places, the suburbs are becoming more where there's constantly kind of up and down economy and different things like that. So I think the West Side's, you know, pretty nice in this regard compared to back then.
Yeah.
Well, things change. Things evolve.
That's right.
Definitely.
Changes there. The politics change and all of that.
That's
you
right.
mentioned one of the songs earlier, and we should talk about some of the other songs. Well, when you're a jet, you're always a jet.
Yeah. When you're a jet.
That was the first one that came to mind.
The jet song. yep, it's definitely, even though these characters are not in a... family as far as what we would consider like a family, but they consider their gang their family. And it's you stick with your gang, your family, your friends, no matter what. And that's what that whole song's about is, you know, they say when you're a jet through and through, and you back up your brothers no matter what, you know. And so that's ultimately what kind of causes the demise is, you know, you have the one jet who's really trying to, Tony, is trying to make peace and make everyone understand that you don't have to fight with someone just because they're not like you, that you can be all live the same place and get along, and there's no reason for the fighting. And he tries to arrange this very friendly fist fight instead of weapons, and it all goes wrong. And the weapons come out, and, you know, I don't want to give too much of the story away, what happens.
Let's then kind of divert a little. People want to hear about the romance in the story. That's
romance.
What Romeo and Juliet was about. So tell us about the characters involved in that.
Tony and Maria are the main characters. And actually, it's interesting, kind of going back, West Side Story, when it came out on Broadway in the 50s, won every... every Tony Award that it was, which it won, like, I want to say like 10 Tony Awards the year that it came out. And then about 10 years later, the movie came out and it won the Academy Award that year for Best Motion Picture. And Natalie Wood played the original Maria, and she was very, very young when she played that role. And In the movie. Mm-hmm. And so she played the role of Maria, which is the young Puerto Rican girl, and who falls in love with the American boy, Tony. And it's funny because it's not a realistic love in this what we would consider. They fall in love in, like, 2 seconds. It's one of those love at first sight moments.
Hey, but when you're 16.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe it takes 1 second.
Yeah. And we get a good chuckle out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, because it's not really realistic.
No, it's not realistic. And, you know, even the script gives the timeline of all of the events. And everything that takes place happens within 24 hours. The whole show, from start to finish, is in 24-hour time period. And so within that time, you have these two characters who meet at a school or at a dance at the gym. And that's where songs like Mambo and stuff come in that people will know. And they see each other, love at first sight, and they don't really seem to care that they are different, that they are from different countries, that their families do not approve. And then you have all of these things similar to Romeo and Juliet, where he goes to her apartment building and you have the balcony scene, and they sing the beautiful song Tonight, which is, you know, there are so many well-known songs from the show. I think people will recognize for sure.
Oh, yeah. Maria, Tonight.
Maria. Yeah. And they fall in love, and it ends up being that her brother, who is the leader of the shark gang, is not okay with this, of course, because he wants her to be in love with the boy Chino, who she's supposed to be intended to marry. Mm. And so there's this whole issue of culture from the standpoint that relationships were somewhat arranged, and she's going against that. So, and going following her heart after 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And the music, of course, I mean, if you've ever seen the movie or seen the show, the music is just phenomenal, and the voices in this cast are just stunning. So to get to hear them with this beautiful orchestration, and actually the choreography is all from the original show, so that was one of the challenges, is they got to do the choreography from the original show, and it's just a thrill. I mean, I think one thing, it's such a hard story in one way, but the beauty of the music and of the dancing keeps you focused on it, keeps you watching it. And so even though it's a very intense story, I mean, it's so inspiring and moving to hear these voices singing this stunning music. So,
and they're playing characters that really are their own age, you know, and we typically with the spring show that is, every spring we do a show that's just for the high schoolers. And typically, you know, some of them will be playing adult roles and some of them will be playing roles that are younger than themselves. In this case, they're all playing teenage kids, and we asked for adult men to be in the cast to play the adult male roles so that there is that physical difference and adult presence on stage, because it just really helps that story come to life. So we have our guest male adult performers.
Sure.
Right. And the kids come from all over the Kansas City area to be in the show. I mean, it brought in a lot of teenagers who really wanted that challenge. So the talent is really very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas City just keeps producing. You know, it really is a center for musical theater. And if you go to Broadway, in every show, there'll be Kansas City performers. So we're just real excited about getting to see these young people, because some of them I know will end up on Broadway because they're so extremely talented.
Yeah, we're speaking with Amy Sander, the director and general manager of Culture House, and Jeremiah Enna, the executive director of Culture House. They're telling us about the Culture House production of West Side Story, which opens up this Friday morning, 9:30 a.m. Is that for schools?
It's actually Thursday morning.
Thursday? Okay.
Yep, Thursday morning at 9:30. It is we call it our school performance, but it is also open to the public. So people can get tickets for that morning show as well.
Okay. Performances then continue after the opening on, probably not the official opening, but April 10th at 9:30. Performances then at 7 p.m. on Thursday.
Correct.
Then on Friday the 11th at 7 7 p.m.
Uh-huh.
as well.
Yep.
Saturday, 2 o'clock p.m. and again at 7 o'clock p.m.
Correct.
Twice on that day. And the performances will be held at the Indian Creek Community Church, 12480 South Black Bob in Olathe, Kansas.
Correct.
There's a website and a number you can call. You told me earlier you would prefer they went online to make their arrangements.
Yeah, it's easier that way. You can select your own seats with the seat map that is reserved seating. So that way they can get on there and actually hand select which seats they will be in.
That's right. In Indian Creek Community Church, if you've never been there, it's a theater space. It's a really beautiful space. So the seating chart is accurate, and it's a, you know, they can pick their own seats.
Okay, that would be culturehouse.com, C-U-L-T-U-R-E. HOUSE.com. There is also a number. Can I give out the number?
Absolutely.
As well?
Sure.
Yeah.
913-393-3141. And the performances, of course, are at the Indian Creek Community Church, 12480 South Black Bob Road in Olathe, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 66062. I'm speaking with Amy and Jeremiah about the show. Culture House is a dance organization as well as a theatrical organization.
Right. The Academy of the Arts at the Culture House has classes in dance, theater, music, and art. And I'm very proud of our theater program because the curriculum is very sophisticated. So for the students who go through the whole program, they have Shakespeare, they have diction, they have technical classes. We start a playwriting program this fall. And so we draw a lot of students this is what they want to do.
If the same number I gave for ticketing, was that also the same number they should call if they have an interest in any of these classes?
That's correct, yeah. And for students who are, you know, if you have a child who's and you're wanting to find out if this is their field, we have a lot of summer programs that have very, you know, easy entry levels, and it's fun and engaging, and it's a great chance for students to find out if this is what they want to do.
Yeah, now you mentioned earlier, Amy, you'll be directing this summer Big River, and
yes.
That performance will be at the Kauffman Center.
We're mm-hmm. very excited, yes, and it's more our adult theater. We do have some students and teenagers in that show, but it's definitely mostly because of that particular show requires a very strong adult cast.
Mm-hmm.
So we are super excited about that show and the opportunity to perform at Kauffman, for sure.
Yeah, that coming up this summer. West Side Story is the show that will be starting this week. Don't be confused.
Mm-hmm.
It will open Thursday morning, actually, 9:30 a.m., another performance on Thursday evening at 7, just in the evening on Friday. Two performances on Saturday, 2 in the afternoon and 7 p.m. at night at the Indian Creek Community Church in Olathe, Kansas. And Amy and Jeremiah are with us. It's a dance organization. How would you divide that up?
Well,
music, dance?
Right. The Culture House Academy has classes in all areas, dance, theater, music, and art. But we're often known for our professional company, Sterling Dance Theater.
Okay.
And they just performed at the Kauffman in February with their 7th annual performance of a production called Underground. And that's becoming an annual tradition in Kansas City that we are thrilled about, based on the Underground Railroad.
Sure.
And our wonderful critic, Paul Horsley, here in Kansas City, he chose it as one of the top 10 performances of the decade for Kansas City. And so Sterling Dance Theater has really, you know, put us on the map. They're just an innovative, world-class company that's producing new work for Kansas City. So it's just exciting. Those dancers that move here from all over the country to be a part of this, they become some of the teachers for our dance school. And so our dancers are at Alvin Ailey and, you know, getting full ride scholarships to American Ballet Theater. And the same level of quality is really being applied to our theater program as well. And we're drawing better and better teachers who are just passionate about their own work outside in the theater community in Kansas City as well as teaching our students to the best of their ability.
On this website, can they get information about all the classes, the timing and the dates of all that?
That's right. They can get details at culturehouse.com about the programs we have, as well as links to Sterling Dance Theater's work as well. In fact, they have a concert coming up in a few weeks. So if you're a dance lover, come out and see them as well.
Yeah.
And the summer programs are also all listed on the front page of the website, because that, like Jeremiah said, is a really good place to go and kind of start. We start at age four.
Oh, wow.
So everyone kind of get known for this high level kind of training, but we do start with the little bitties, and that's with dance and music and theater
art.
And art. Actually,
yeah.
We start with 4 year olds. So, and the summer programs are jam packed. And actually, we've got two other shows this summer for the summer camps. The high schoolers will be doing Hairspray, and the younger students, the 7 to 12-year-olds, will be doing Disney's Little Mermaid.
Oh.
So
they can sign up and be in those shows, and we put them together in 2 weeks. It's very intense, a lot of fun, and those kids get a chance to perform these great musicals.
Yeah. West Side Story is the show that's this weekend.
Mm-hmm. That's
it's
right.
It's the one that's coming up, you know, the Sharks.
And the Jets.
Based on based pretty much on the story of Romeo and Juliet. Moved to a different era.
Correct.
The times, they are a-changing. And it changed from Shakespeare's era to the 1950s. And it's even different now, 50, 60 years later.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That show comes up this Thursday. I almost said it again.
Uh-huh.
In the morning. It's pretty much, I guess you said, for schools to come for that. But adults are also invited.
Adults are welcome. Yeah. And then that Thursday night, Friday night, and two on Saturday.
At the Indian Creek Community Church, 12480 South Black Bob in Olathe. Black Bob is one of the main drags, correct?
Correct. It's right there off of 119th and Black Bob is where the church is.
A minute away.
How far off of, say, Metcalf, for instance?
I guess
Metcalf would be too far.
I-35, you get off at 119th,
okay,
and you go east, and it's a mile away. It's that close to the exit.
Okay. Sounds great. Amy Sander, the general manager and the director of West Side Story, and Jeremiah Anna, the executive director of Culture House, and their presentation this weekend of West Side Story at the Indian Creek Community Church on Black Bob in Olathe, Kansas. The number to call for more information, 913-393-3141, and the website for that ticketing and all other questions about classes at Culture House, culturehouse.com. Thank you for being
here. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah,
this was great.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad it was great. We'll take this break. When we return, more to tell you about. So much is going on in Kansas City these days. It's hard to cover it all. In fact, it's darn near impossible, but I make the best effort I can. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Like a well-oiled and sophisticated machine manufactured by Stark Industries, Captain America: The Winter Soldier is a slick and competent product, providing Marvel Comics fans with the action and eye candy they expect. Chris Evans returns as the patriotic superhero who's been thawed from his cryogenic sleep and is now making the adjustment from the 1940s to the modern world. He and his fellow S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, including Black Widow, Falcon, and Nick Fury, battle Hydra, an evil organization that's infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. itself. The solid cast also includes Robert Redford, Scarlett Johansson, Anthony Mackie, and Samuel L. Jackson. A mashup of Hong Kong-style action, kinetic martial arts, and big-budget Hollywood special effects, Captain America: The Winter Soldier may not be great art, but it provides an entertaining early jumpstart to the summer blockbuster season. Particle Fever is a very accessible and involving science documentary about experiments at the Large Hadron Collider near Geneva, Switzerland, and the search for the elusive Higgs boson, better known as the God Particle. Theoretical physicist Mark Levinson shot this intriguing movie over a period of several years. Over 500 hours of footage has been whittled down to 1 hour and 39 minutes by two-time Oscar-winning editor Walter Murch. The acclaimed Kansas City-based special effects house, MK12, is responsible for the impressive animation. Particle Fever affords viewers a chance to share the giddy excitement these physicists experience with their new discoveries. The 18th annual Kansas City Film Fest runs April 5th through the 13th at the Alamo Draft House and the Cinemark Palace on the Plaza. This juried festival features over 100 regional, national, and international films. A number of filmmakers will be on hand for Q&A sessions. More information is available at kcfilmfest.org. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
This week, we travel to Guatemala. for the newest edition of our God and Government series. Guatemala is still trying to make sense of the decades-long civil war that took 200,000 lives.
That battle over the memory of the past still continues today, and it's volatile.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
Archbishop Jorge Bergoglio was elected Pope in March of 2013. What has happened during his first year? How is he seeking to change the Catholic Church? Mary O'Halloran, who is a media consultant and a panelist on Ruckus on KCPT, is going to tell us all about the new Pope this Wednesday at noon on the All Souls Forum right here on KKFI.
Wednesday night is Arts Night on KKFI. At 6 p.m., it's Art Speak Radio, followed by the award-winning From Arc to Microchip at 6:30. Then it's live radio theater on LA Theater Works from 7 to 9 p.m., followed by chamber music with Dr. Mike. Get your arts on Wednesday night on KKFI.
I send you greetings from David Crosby and Stephen Stills and Neil Young. Long may our freak flag fly.
Graham Nash's keynote speech from the Folk Alliance Conference back in February on the Thursday night special at 7, right after the Heartland Labor Forum.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Great shows going on in the area right now, a lot of them at a lot of different places. It's really amazing. Kansas City is quite a theater and music town. We're going to journey on over to the Barn Players of Johnson County. We journey over there quite a bit. They have some very interesting shows over there. And they are doing Follies by Stephen Sondheim. Strangely enough, in the first part of the show, we talked about West Side Story lyrics by Stephen Sondheim is that. So a lot of Sondheim going on in town right now. With us to tell us all about Follies, what can you expect? Oh, just the name makes me think of singing, a lot of dancing, a lot of whirling around. We'll see if I'm right. Two of the people in the show are with us to tell us all about it. John Emmons is with us. He plays the role of Buddy Plummer in the show. He has appeared in two different versions of the show Company at the Jewish Community Center and at the Olathe Civic Theater. He also has appeared in Damn Yankees at Theater in the Park. Yes, I say that word quite fluently. Because I remember baseball in the 50s. And I remember some of the players that they talk about in that show. So oh, yeah. I have a special affinity for that show. He's also appeared in Chess, the big hit last year at the Barn Players, as well as Curtains at the Barn Players. And later this summer, we'll be in Spamalot at the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Theater Center. In the White Theater is the theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center. He'll be appearing in Spamalot there coming up this summer. He also sings with the Heartland Men's Chorus and is a member of Heartaches, a small ensemble.
Right.
With the Heartland Men's Chorus. Sounds very interesting. Kip Simmons has made a return visit. We had a little talk about which show he actually came for because he has a bunch of them here. He appeared in Chess. And actually won the Barn Players 2013 Barney Award for Best Supporting Actor. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That.
Thank
that
you.
Was quite a show.
Thanks.
People loved that show.
Yeah, it was.
He also has appeared in Company. Is that one of the places where John appeared mm-hmm. in Company?
Yeah, we just finished doing that together.
Okay, well, good. He also has appeared in Little Shop of Horrors, Urinetown, Bat Boy, A New Brain. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
That was my favorite.
I just love the title of that, really. And in Assassins, you were John Wilkes Booth. You were that assassin. It was a show. It was a musical. People who've never seen it might not understand. A musical full of famous assassins throughout history. He was John Wilkes Booth. Also appeared in The Drowsy Chaperone, 9 to 5. Has appeared in Chicago. Toured with, was it Schoolhouse Rock?
Yeah, Schoolhouse Rock. Schoolhouse,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Has appeared at the American Heartland Theater, the Center Stage Theater. That's at Johnson County Community College. The Chestnut. I think that's where I interviewed you before. Musical Theater Heritage, the New Theater, Quality Hill, Theater in the Park, Unicorn, Urban Culture Project, and will direct La Caja Follies, not to be confused with La Caja Faux, later this year at the Barn Players as well. We welcome both of you to the show. See, the credits took up half the interview.
Yeah.
Both very experienced, of course. Friday, April the 18th, in the evening, you open with Follies. Tell us about Follies. Am I right? I picture a bygone era, lots of high leg kicks,
absolutely.
Songs.
Absolutely. Showgirls galore.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, the show is actually a reunion of the Showgirls. And so it's quite a large cast. There's 32 people in the cast. And if you've ever been to the Barn, that's a lot of people to fit on the stage. But there's the present day version of these people that are coming back for the reunion, and then many of those characters have the younger version of themselves, the memories or the ghost of the past that help tell the story of Follies.
So we see these ladies years past,
mm-hmm.
and in the present time.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's a clever way to do that. Do both sets of cast have numbers?
They do. The young versions of the characters and the present-day versions both have numbers to do and parts to tell the story.
John,
because it's the whole person.
John, you play the role of Buddy Plummer. How does Buddy Plummer fit into all this?
You know, Buddy Plummer is married to a former Weissman showgirl from the Follies. And what we find out in the show with Buddy is that Sally is and really always has been in love with Ben Stone, which is, of course, played by Kip here.
Uh-oh.
And so it's, you know, when you think of Follies, this is quintessential Sondheim. You know, you've got shows like songs like Beautiful Girls and I'm Still Here, Broadway Baby, all these classic Sondheim things. You don't realize how gritty and real the show can really be. It's very poignant.
Oh.
So, a lot of emotions in the show.
Kip plays the role of Ben Stone. You're the one that's, you're stealing this other guy's girl.
Well, not exactly, but...
that's the way all the kids.
Yeah, they were best friends in college. They went to school together and were best friends and dated these two Follies girls. And so they have a little bit of a history, and when we meet up with them at this reunion, it's kind of some of the ghosts of the past and kind of like things that have been left unresolved kind of come to a head during this reunion.
That tends to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that tends to happen. Lots of great musical numbers. Let's talk about some of the musical numbers, because a show like Follies, that's what people want to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some, you know, that have become standards now, like Broadway Baby and Losing My Mind and Too Many Mornings. So it's a really good score, and I believe it's the first score that he wrote the music and lyrics too.
Yeah, when you combine the two.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, some of those great dance. I think of dance numbers. I think of musical numbers.
There's some great dancing. Lots of tap shoes on the stage.
Tap shoes. I should have guessed.
Yes, of course.
So they have the wood floor on stage at the Barn.
There is, and you know you couldn't have Follies without you know your tap shoes. And there's some great tappers in the group.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's quite fun.
For those who aren't following this, and by that I mean people too young to know, the era that the original Follies was set in was about when?
The reunion is actually in the 70s, but of course the Follies themselves were in the years after the war, in the 40s.
In the 40s, uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's kind of, in fact, I think one of the lines in the show is that the host of the Follies, Dimitri Weissman, doesn't trust any music that's under 30 or something, something to that extent. So he's, you know, he likes all the big band kind of sounding music and the classics that way.
Yeah, I guess a lot of that probably falls to the musical director to come up with. And tell us about your musical director.
The music director for the show is Tim Brazelton.
Uh-huh.
So, and he's been doing a great job. Sondheim's not the easiest music in the world to learn or to sing, but he's doing a great job with it.
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of adjustments to some of the singers, and you both sing, do some of the numbers provide, you know, some difficult moments for you? You're singing big band songs from the 40s for the most part.
Well, yeah, they have that kind of a feel to them. And again, the songs have all kinds of different emotions in them. You have... you know, happy-go-lucky songs, remembering all the good times. And then you have songs about, you know, the regrets that go along with some of those memories.
Sure. So can you name some of those songs for the folks?
Sure. Waiting for the Girls Upstairs is a great
Girls Upstairs
memory song. You know, we're thinking about the past and thinking about, you know, the girls coming down from the dressing room after the show and where what we're going to do afterwards, go dancing and dining and a night on the town. Yeah. So full of great memories there. And then you contrast that with I'm Losing My Mind, which is, you know, kind of a pinnacle of the show where Sally, my wife, is coming to terms with reality and fantasy and how those clash together. So it's like I said, the show has got a little bit of everything emotion-wise. You can run the whole gamut.
Any tension of the fact that she might be seeing Ben again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's lots of tension there. Lots of tension there.
I would imagine.
And I might have a girl on the side myself.
Uh-oh.
as my character.
Well, I retract everything I said.
Yeah. So Buddy's not, his intentions are ultimately good, but, the show has lots of intriguing points, I guess you could say it that way.
Sort of a story within a story, perhaps.
Yeah, it's kind of like real life. It's a little complicated, and I think maybe that's one of the things that made this show so popular. How many awards, Kip, do you remember how many awards this show received?
No,
20 awards? It's won many.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that might have been, you know, part of what appeals to the audience with this show is that, you know, it really kind of is messy like real life, and yet, you know, it's the Follies, so there's this facade that, you know, is, you know, both projecting an image of what we want people to see, but also protecting ourselves from, what's going on inside of with that facade that we put up.
Yeah. So. Now, the era of the Follies, that was a style of music that fit that era to a glow. In fact, was that the most popular kind of show going on that people could go see back in that era?
Yeah, it was a very popular, like, art form, like, between the wars, like, between mm-hmm. World War I and World War II was when the Follies were very popular.
Yeah, so it would involve a big band, singers and dancers.
Comedians, vaudeville.
Oh, I see, okay.
The whole thing.
Was there a comedian in the show?
Well, John has a lot of really good comedic songs in the show. The whole last, like, 30 minutes of the show, it's like the main couple, two couples, it's like they're reliving all this stuff from the past.
Sure.
And they get kind of so worked up, and it kind of boils to a point that it kind of brings back the era of the Follies, and it's like, and the set's going to go through a complete change, like, you know, the theater was in its glory days, and then the whole last 30 minutes of it is just song. It's, you know, it's called Love. Yep. The section's called Loveland, and it's like telling the story of these couples, but through music.
Through Follies numbers.
Follies numbers, yeah. I would think in a show like this, the hardest things to work on, well, the songs, of course. I'm not minimizing your efforts there. But the dancing and the costuming, I would think, would be the hardest of all. What about the dancing numbers? Do you have a choreographer you're working with?
Guy Gardner's our choreographer. He's amazing. The stuff that he's having us do is just brilliant. I will say that, personally, I'm getting a great workout in my numbers that are very energetic. So moving all over the stage and just doing all kinds of great stuff.
I'm going to assume that you probably tapped before now.
I did. As a child, those tap lessons finally are paying off.
It took long enough, but it finally is, right?
Right.
Looking years into the future, I would one day be in a show called Follies, and I would need to tap dance.
Get to use my tap shoes.
That's right. What about the costuming? What do you both wear? Do you play yourselves back then? Do different actors play you back then and then in the 70s?
The young versions of ourselves are played by different characters, mm-hmm. but we play ourselves at the reunion, of course. And I think for us, for the guys, it's actually you know, pretty basic. We get to wear tuxedos.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, you know, in that era, when you went out on the town, you wore a tuxedo.
Sure.
So for us, it's easy. It doesn't, our styles don't change very much.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get to see the women's costumes here very shortly, but I'm expecting some really great stuff, too.
Are they going flapper on us?
Well, I think the showgirls, like especially the ghosts of the showgirls past, they're going to be big, like big headdresses, and I mean they were very flamboyant costumes, very very intricate.
I'll bet. So, who gets the credit for the costume?
Frank Capono is our our costume designer.
Yeah, that would be a lot of work.
Yes,
period pieces, especially one like that, I think would be a lot of work. Not so bad for the tuxedos. Tuxedos really don't change, do they?
No, they. And it's great because you don't have to worry about it going out of style. Unless you had a powder blue one, you're pretty good.
so the cast of the 40s. It's broken up into, as we explained earlier, to the 40s and then the 70s. Mm-hmm. So the men in the 40s were basically the same kinds of tuxedos as the men in the 70s?
They were kind of poor then. I'm not sure if they had as nice of tuxedos, but, so they might have more blazer jackets, but,
It was the depression between the two wars. And
right.
It really was, But the audience, the people of that era, they flocked to shows like that. It was an escape from reality, because reality was kind of bleak, really.
Right.
This gave them the excitement and let their imagination soar, really.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with two of the actors involved in Follies by Stephen Sondheim. It's going on at the Barn Players. It will open on Friday, the 18th of April at 7:30 p.m. Basically, the Barn runs are 3 weekends. So it's Friday the 18th, Saturday the 19th, and Friday the 18th, Saturday the 19th. That's all I have for the first weekend. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the move to the next weekend, Friday the 25th, Saturday the 26th, then a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 27th at 2 o'clock p.m., then a special Monday night performance, an industry night performance on Monday the 28th at 7:30 p.m. Then we move into the month of May, the merry month of May, Thursday the 1st at 7:30, Friday the 2nd at 7:30, Saturday the 3rd at 7:30, and then Sunday the 4th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Barn Players of Johnson County, located at 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 66202. The Barn Players prefer that you make your ticketing arrangements online, so you would need to go to thebarnplayers.org, and you need the in there, thebarnplayers.org, or call this toll-free 800 number, which is 1-800-838-3006. That's the number to call to see Follies, originally done by Stephen Sondheim at the Barn Players of Johnson County. We're speaking with two of the performers in the show, John Edmonds, who plays the role of Buddy Plummer, and Kip Simmons, who plays the role of Ben Stone in the show. When you're with a cast that big, it involves all the more organization by the director and the music director to make sure everyone gets their time and everything gets done. I imagine you're probably practicing a song while somebody else perhaps is somewhere else in the theater practicing their dancing. Has that been pretty much the way it's worked?
Absolutely. Now we're getting to the point where we're getting into more running the show, but certainly initially when we start the production, you know, you've got groups working on their acting pieces and in one room and dancing in another room while you're going through music in another at times. So, yeah, and then it all comes together. So it does take a lot of coordination. Eric Magnus is the director, and he is fantastic.
Yeah, you've done a number of challenging shows here. This has to be one of the more challenging ones, I would think, especially with the tap included with the songs.
This is the most complicated character I think I've ever played in my entire life. And Eric's been great about helping me discover the things that, you know, make the character come to life and real and what's the right word? It makes them a living character. And
you know,
it's
making a believable, real person is the hardest.
Right, rounding out the characters and thinking of things in new ways. He's like I said, he's brilliant.
Sure. Now, Kip, you play the role of Ben Stone. What's your take on this? Difficult?
Yeah, this is probably one of the most challenging roles that I've ever done. been doing this a long time, and I tend to like to do the comedic roles, you know, the more musical comedy roles. So Ben Stone's a really complicated guy. He's pretty successful. He's a successful diplomat and a successful author, but he's realizing now as he's in his 50s that it's kind of coming, you know, that it came at a price. And he looks back on his life and he's kind of finding everything meaningless and he's kind of just kind of adrift. And it all kind of comes to a head at this reunion because he's faced with things from his past that he hadn't dealt with before. So it's just, it's heavy stuff. Yeah, it's heavy stuff.
For the audience at home, some of the main songs in the show, you'll think they'll remember some of them?
Oh, absolutely. Beautiful Girls is, you know, classic and timeless. And you have Losing My Mind.
What else? Broadway Baby. I'm Still Here.
I'm Still Here. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's a good score.
Songs that kind of identified that era. And I find it interesting you're doing a 40s version and then a 70s version. Does it change much? Are the songs the same way?
Well, I think you can kind of tell, like, the songs that are in the present are very Sondheim, very, you know, introspective and very much about what the character is dealing with. But then when they do the numbers that are from the past Folly shows, I think they definitely have a different tone to them. They sound more like they could have come from that era. So, but they still work together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a good score. I wasn't all that familiar with it before we started rehearsals for this, but
Sure are now.
Yeah. I really like it. It's a good score.
It really is. Now, John also sings, as I mentioned earlier, with the Heartland Men's Chorus and the small ensemble, Heartaches?
Heartache, yeah. I have sung with Heartland Men's Chorus for about 9 years and off and on with the Heartaches throughout that time. Heartaches is a small group, and they do, being a smaller group, they can actually go out and do smaller venues and, mm-hmm. and shorter, you know, organizational time-wise sets of music. So that's been really fun. In fact, recently the Heartland Men's Chorus just finished a show called I Am Harvey Milk, where we did a joint concert with the Gateway Men's Chorus of St. Louis, and they came up, some of their folks came up here, and we performed at the Folly. Last weekend we just went down there and performed with them in St. Louis. Interestingly enough, the visuals that were done at the I Am Harvey Milk concert were done by Michael Ong, who's also doing some of the visual work for Follies. So it's a great time. Michael does great visual work.
Good people are in demand.
They are.
It's not that surprising. Kip will be directing, and I'm anxious to hear your take on this. You'll be directing La Cage aux Folies this. Is it late summer, early fall?
It goes up in November, yeah.
In November, yeah. Combine the era of these Follies with the Follies you're doing now.
Well, you know, La Cage aux Folies is a pretty, you know, it's pretty well-known musical.
It's more of a European feel.
Well, it's all drag performers, and I don't know if you remember the movie Birdcage, but Birdcage was based on La Cage, which was also based on a French film. So it's going to be pretty extravagant. It's all drag. It takes place in a drag club in the south of France, and I have a good costumer lined up, so it should be great. But it's also like a pretty, it's also has like a basic love story to it about the meaning of family. And
well, sure. So, how do French Follies then differ from American Follies?
Well,
very much.
It's all extravagant.
That'll be happening in November. So you've got a while to prepare for that. I bet you the costuming on that will be something else.
Yeah.
So the barn is doing two Folly shows this year.
Uh-huh.
Going all out for all of that.
Yeah, they have a great season lined up. I think next is August Osage County, and
August Osage County is next, and then followed by Noises Off, which is a farce, and
Hair.
Then Hair.
Oh, yeah.
And then La Cage aux Folies. So it's a great season.
What's the children's show in the summer? You remember?
They've
done Cats, they've done Dogs, they've done Bears. What's coming up this year?
They've done Shrek.
They've done Shrek.
I don't remember what the next one is.
They've done Shrek as well. We'll find out. We'll get back to you on that. But Follies, by Stephen Sondheim opens at the Barn on Friday, April the 18th for three consecutive weekends, the 18th and the 19th. No Sunday matinee that first weekend?
No, that's Easter Sunday.
That's Easter Sunday. That would be why.
So we actually moved that performance to the May 1st slot. We don't normally do a Thursday show.
That's the Thursday show. Okay, so then the second weekend, Friday the 25th, 26th, and Sunday afternoon, the 27th, that industry night performance on the 28th, Monday, then Thursday the 1st, where they move that other show to, the May 1st, May 2nd, May 3rd, all evening performances, and closes with a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 4th at 2 o'clock p.m., all at the Barn Players of Johnson County. The number to call for more information, 1-800-838-3006, or online at thebarnplayers.org to make your arrangements to see Follies by Stephen Sondheim. I want to thank my guests for being with us and sorting all of this out. Not that there was all that much. John Edmonds, who plays the role of Buddy Plummer, and Kip Simmons, who plays the role of Ben Stone. We'll see how it all shakes out with Follies on the stage of the Barn Players beginning on Friday the 18th of April. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Michael.
The Jazz Insider is next. Not exactly Follies music, but great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.